This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. You're listening to Cresta in the Afternoon.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for being with me on this Friday before Father's Day. We've decided to take a little time to focus in on fathers. Dr. Meg Meeker will be joining us during this hour. Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, 10 Secrets Every Father Should Know. Meg has been on the program with me a few times, and an exceptional guest. In fact, tonight, by the way, on EWTN's World Over Live with Raymond Arroyo, Meg will also be the featured guest. She has served as a pediatrician, and look, if you ask the question, who is the most important person in a young girl's life? No, it's not the mom, it's the dad. That's right, and Meg Meeker has the data and the clinical experience to prove it, and she'll be doing that with us during this hour. She spent more than 20 years counseling girls, and so she knows that fathers, more than anyone else, will set the course for their daughters' lives. You may remember Dr. Meeker from her best-selling book, Epidemic, How Teen Sex is Killing Our Kids, and it's a very straight-shooting book, and during this next 20 minutes or so, she's going to help lay out how you can rebuild that relationship with your daughter, guys. Okay? Father's Day coming up, we're focusing on you, your responsibility. Give moms a break. And how you can use your fatherhood to help shape her life, for the better. So that's coming up during this hour. And staying with the Father's Day theme, our friend Brad Wilcox will be joining us. Dr. Wilcox is assistant professor of sociology at the University of Virginia and a member of the James Madison Society at Princeton University. There have been dramatic changes in American family life, as you know, and those dramatic changes have affected evangelical and mainline Protestant churches, but they've taken different directions. And spokesmen from those two different traditions have taken different positions on changes in the family. Probably this is best seen regarding abortion, homosexual relationships, whereas evangelical Protestants tend to lean conservative on these issues and can usually be relied upon to stick with the biblical material. Many mainline Protestant leaders have decided to conform or accommodate themselves to the culture. Well, Dr. Wilcox is going to explore these different family ideologies that are held by evangelicals and mainline churches, and we'll have a great time with him. This is kind of a sociologist look at what he calls soft patriarchs, new men, how Christianity shapes fathers and husbands. So that's coming up. We'll look at cohabitation, parenting, fatherhood, and the influence of religious belief and practice on marriage. So that's coming up on this afternoon's Cresta in the Afternoon. But first, let's get those news headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you, Alan. Good afternoon. This is your Ave Maria Radio News on Friday, June the 15th. It's the Solemnity of the Sacred Heart. The Senate is expected to revive a contentious immigration reform bill next week, a move that is being applauded by President Bush. Correspondent Terry Moore has the latest.
Cheered by a bipartisan revival of immigration reform legislation in the Senate, President Bush again urged lawmakers to get it done. Bush addressed the National Hispanic Prayer Breakfast.
Each day our nation fails to act, the problem only grows worse. I will continue to work closely with members of both parties, get past our differences, and pass a bill I can sign this year.
Senate leaders announced a deal Thursday to put a complex immigration reform bill back on the Senate floor. The bipartisan measure was pulled recently amid heavy fire from the right and the left. Supporters accused opponents of trying to amend it to death. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
The Philadelphia City Council has rescinded a resolution declaring it a pro-choice city. Councilman Frank Rizzo introduced the resolution because he says the city should not take a stance on abortion. The resolution passed 13-4. The Catholic League of Massachusetts is condemning yesterday's vote by the state legislature to not put the same-sex marriage question on next year's state ballot. Nearly 170,000 voters signed petition to get the issue placed before the voters. The question would have added an amendment to the Constitution that defines marriage as only between one man and one woman. As a result of yesterday's legislative vote, same-sex so-called marriage in Massachusetts remains legal. The city of Seattle is considering banning microwave popcorn. King TV reports a memo tells employees that they're considering the ban because of several evacuations in recent years caused by smoke alarms tripped by burning popcorn. The memo says there have been 8 evacuations at the Justice Center in the past 3 years, each one affecting over 400 people. The Justice Center includes the city's jail cells and courtrooms, and the buildings are shut down for between 30 and 40 minutes each time. If the problem continues, the city plans to impose a microwave popcorn ban in downtown city buildings. And now your fascinating fact for the day. Female mosquitoes are deaf. I just don't know how that helps us. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Join me right now, Dr. Meg Meeker. She has spent the past 20 years practicing pediatric and adolescent medicine, counseling teens, counseling parents. She's a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics and a fellow of the National Advisory Board of the Medical Institute. A popular speaker. We've had Dr. Meeker with us before. She's the author of Epidemic, How Teen Sex is Killing Our Kids, and most recently, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. 10 Secrets That Every Father Should Know. And those of us who are fathers of girls have lots of experiences that we can relate. And so I'll begin with Dr. Meeker. Meg, good to have you back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Tell me about your dad.
My dad. Well, I actually opened the book with my dad and talk about, you know, an experience of overhearing a phone conversation he was having that really changed my life. And that occurred right after I had been rejected from a number of medical schools and had to make alternate plans. And I overheard him talk to a friend on the phone saying that I would be going to medical school in the next year or two. And I just was stunned. And, you know, the confidence that he instilled in me by just hearing that he believed in me so much changed the course of my life. And sure enough, in the next couple of years, I did go to medical school. So that's the power that a dad has in a daughter's life.
You have a strong relationship with your dad?
I do, yes.
Mm-hmm. He's still alive?
He is.
Okay. Well, he's considerably older now then.
Mm-hmm. He is. Yep, he is. And sadly, he has some dementia. And, you know, I helped take care of my father, but he is still alive.
Yeah, and of course he helped take care of you, and so there's reciprocity here.
Absolutely.
I have a daughter. She's now married, and I loved being the father of a girl. I've got 4 boys, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why. It's just one of those whimsical things, but I wanted to have a girl as my firstborn. And Alexis and I have had a strong relationship. She married a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is a professor of theology, quite a strong character. When I was in the hospital a few years ago for 10 weeks, he was there just about every day.
Aww.
And was this was before he actually was married to my daughter. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of in... He wasn't appended to our family before he got married into it.
Mm-hmm.
How serious? And I do not understand dads who don't enjoy their daughters. So I'm a blind man on this because I always found it even when it's, and it was stressful at times. And mm-hmm. She's a tough nut,
right?
But I loved being a father of a girl, and mm-hmm. I don't understand dads that have something better to do. I understand jobs take time you're away. I understand how that can happen, but I do not understand the emotional absence.
Right. Well, I think there are a lot of different reasons for it. Many fathers who experience a divorce in a family are pushed away and marginalized. And that's very, very sad. And I think some fathers just kind of give up because they don't get the opportunity to spend enough time with their daughters.
How does that happen? How are they marginalized? What's the dynamic that pushes them to the sidelines?
Well, it depends on the state, but I think that legally, you know, I know in, at least in our state of Michigan, you know, mothers fare a lot better in a divorce situation than
yes.
the father does.
Okay.
And, you know, she usually gets more time with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is she ends up doing the day-to-day sort of routine parenting, and he's relegated to the role of, you know, just sort of being a play dad on the weekends, and goes into a role of not wanting to discipline the kids
right.
because, you know, so on and so forth.
It's vacation time over dads.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And I think that's very sad because the great lessons in life aren't learned on the vacation times or the weekends. They're really in just sort of the day-to-day living. But another thing I think is important, what I see routinely, is that fathers feel much less significant in the lives of their girls, particularly their teen daughters, than they really are. And I think there's a lot of reason for that. I think that over the years, you know, media has portrayed fathers as being dunces. They're,
mm-hmm.
you know, men are always the butt end of some joke.
Yep.
You know, God help you if you're a father in a sitcom, you know, on television, because you're portrayed as somebody who just knows nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has an effect. It takes a toll on men over time. And with all the focus on women's abilities to excel in all areas of life, I think that it's made a lot of men feel that they are second rate as far as the parent in the home. But the truth is that men have profound influence and power in a daughter's life in a way that a mother could never. And so I really wanted to write the book as much to sort of show off and applaud masculinity
mm-hmm.
at work in a daughter's life as anything else.
And the social science data has become clear on this. We're not just dependent upon anecdotal evidence, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I, you know, just, you know, I'm a pediatrician. I'm an MD. And
mm-hmm.
one of the things I've been taught to do early on in my career is how to read good scientific literature and how to recognize good literature from bad literature. And repeatedly, the good literature shows that it always comes back to the parents, and now we have more evidence that, you know, a lot of things, for instance, like eating disorders, dad can be very instrumental in help preventing eating disorders in girls and also healing eating disorders in girls who've all fallen prey to it. You know, we have evidence to show girls with a good relationship with their father, their GPA in school is higher. Sometimes they even test higher on IQ tests.
Mm-hmm.
They're more emotionally stable, less likely to be depressed, less likely to start sexual activity in an early age. You know, it goes on and on and on,
mm-hmm.
and that data is very easy to find because there's so much of it.
So would you say, and I realize this is a loaded question,
mm-hmm.
would you say that girls who live solely with their mothers are at a real disadvantage?
Definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I think that's it's a response that America doesn't want to hear because there's so many single
yeah.
mother
yeah,
households.
Sure. You don't want to dump. You don't want to heap
right.
guilt or you know
exactly.
or full
and,
low
but
expectations
I,
on people.
Right. But I believe if we just sort of deal with reality and deal with the way it is, you know, we can make some strides and we can help. I think it's most important, at least for those girls who don't have a father in their life or they have an abusive or very disinterested father, to say the fact that your father is not here means that there are some pieces of yourself that are going to have holes in them that will never be filled by anybody. So don't mm-hmm. go looking for that. Accept it, know it, and let's move forward.
Okay.
But don't try to fill it with, you know, a 17-year-old boyfriend or whatever.
Can churches help here? Can churches help by not letting single moms be without strong male influence in their lives?
Churches are a wonderful resource because I think that there are men, youth pastors or pastors around who can sidle up next to a teenager and really help her negotiate some very tough times in her life and provide some male leadership and male influence. And I say leadership because girls don't need more friends, more guy friends. They need a male presence in their life that they can look up to, who will help take them in the right direction, and who's really grown up. And churches are a wonderful resource for that.
Meg, hold it there. We'll come back, continue the conversation. The book is so useful, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. It moves along quickly. 10 secrets that every father should know. So, yes, we will give some of those secrets, and we'll give them point by point. We'll give them all to you because I want you to pick up the book. Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, 10 Secrets Every Father Should Know. But, in fact, you can make a list. I'm Al Cresta.
Hello, this is Sister Ann Shields from Food for the Journey. I want to invite you to join me on July 6th through the 8th for the Newell Ministry School of Spirituality. Together we'll learn how to deepen our relationship with the Lord and make progress on the spiritual journey. The place, St. John's Youth and Family Center in Plymouth. For information, call Jessica at 734-662-1730, extension 32.
Little more than 200 years ago, our forefathers brought forth a new nation under God, with respect for an authority transcending human power. But is America today truly one nation under God, with God's word outlawed from public schools, marriage redefined, and pornography protected, but 45 million babies aborted? How have the ACLU and other liberal organizations effectively silenced Christian voices? Through the courts. It is the mission of the Thomas More Law Center to fight the ACLU, to defend and assert the rights of Christians in our courts, protecting the sanctity of life and family values, safeguarding our freedom to worship, so that Christian voices can be heard. If you'd like to help, contact the Thomas More Law Center at 734-827-2001 or visit our website at thomasmore.org. Find out more and let your voice be heard.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
Join me, Father Thomas J. Loya, in Light of the East on this station. We are telling the exciting story of how Eastern Catholic churches have nourished the Roman Catholic Church and today's world. This week, after asceticism, sex, prayer, and deviant priests. Light of the East on this station.
Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7 on 990 WDEO.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. My guest, Dr. Meg Meeker, is a pediatrician specializing in adolescent health, author, most recently, of Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, 10 Secrets Every Father Should Know, and she's urging fathers to be nurturers, to be teachers, to be protectors, and to remember that, look, women need men, and young girls need strong fathers. We're going to continue conversation. Of course, you're welcome to join us as well. I didn't give out the phone number earlier, but let me do so now. 1-877-573-7825. That's toll-free. 1-877-573-7825. Looking over some of the notes here, Meg, 40.9% of girls 14 to 17 years old experience unwanted sex, primarily because they fear that their boyfriends will get angry. That's a strange thing.
Isn't it remarkable?
Yeah.
And I that's a great statistic to point out, because many fathers will say, and mothers, you know, I really don't have to worry. My daughter is solid. She's grounded. She has a, you know, her head on her and her shoulders right, and she's smart. But it's really many times daughters who are really good and very conscientious and sensitive have difficulty saying no. And that's why that statistic is so high. Because in some sense, you know, nice girls get chewed up and spit out at times, and they are preyed upon because the culture is really, really hard for them to negotiate. And that's why fathers need to be in there going to bat for them.
Does a father, should a father teach her how to fight?
Oh, teach a girl how to fight?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, by that I mean, I don't necessarily mean pick up a baseball bat and hit somebody.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, have that kind of, some kind of aggressive resistance.
I don't know that they need aggressive resistance. I think a lot of that's just due to the personality of the daughter. I do have one chapter that says, you know, teach her how to fight. Basically, for the dad to teach the daughter to recognize what's coming at her and why, what are the messages, what do different people want from her, what do different people expect from her, and then tell her to expect this to come along, and this is how you would deal with it, and it's going to be hard, and she will make some mistakes, but hang in there. The pressure on young girls, even as young as 11, to engage in early sexual activity is overwhelming. And it's happening to all these nice girls who are having real difficulty saying no to hurt anybody's feelings.
Mm-hmm. And that's because they are sensitive. They don't like those tense situations.
That's right. And yeah. But I think that if a daughter feels that the dad is standing right behind her, ready to defend her, ready to let any boy who dates her know that he's right around the corner, and that young man is accountable to him for everything that happens with the daughter, that's going to make a huge effect. But also, really, just to help his daughter know what is out there and kind of how to deal with it over and over and over.
We had a rule in our household. I don't like to spend too much time talking about our experience because it includes my whole family. So, but at the same time, I don't think this is too odd. Mm-hmm. We had a basic rule that if Lex, my daughter, was going to see somebody, you know, more than just you know, a group setting, or if somebody, you know, wanted to date, mm-hmm. that he had to call me.
Great.
And it was fun. I mean,
it's very fun.
These guys calling up. I admired them because, you know, I knew what it had to feel like.
Right.
Being interviewed by this girl's father.
Oh, it's terrific. And I'll tell you, that's going to weed a whole lot of guys out.
Absolutely.
That aren't really worth her time. What a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, I think that's quite unusual for fathers to do. You know, most fathers feel that once a daughter turns 13 or 14, that she doesn't want his input. She doesn't want him around. She doesn't need him around. And in short, a lot of fathers treat their daughters like they're capable of making decisions or really not. They treat them like they're much more mature than intellectually and cognitively mm-hmm. a girl really is. So.
Well, and sometimes dads get great resistance and insistence that I can live my own life and who
sure.
are you going to tell me what to do? And I think, you know, that's part of growing up. Kids do that. They see things like that. And
absolutely. But I think the difference with our generation in parenting versus, you know, a generation ago is that we believe kids when they say that. I mean, I don't know why we've decided to do that. Kids will have a temper tantrum, and they'll call names, and they'll do sorts of things. And we go, oh, my gosh, you know, they're right. I'm a terrible parent, and so on and so forth. But we take our kids so personally, it's nothing to do with us. It's the stage they're in. So you just don't believe them, and you go forward.
How do you teach humility? You know, you remember all, say, 20 years ago, there was all this discussion about girls have lower self-esteem than boys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, humility is not the same as low self-esteem.
Absolutely not. Actually, it's a way to bolster self-esteem, and it's terribly misunderstood, and it's very politically incorrect. That's why I kind of had fun writing it, to say the truth. Humility is about helping a girl understand that she is not the epicenter of her world and that other human beings, friends, adults, have equal value because they are a human being, and that part of her job in life is to see them and to help them and to live beyond herself, to serve, if you will. And nothing elevates a girl's self-esteem by acting that out and having her father show her how to do that. Because many girls today are so self-focused on their looks or their grades or their, you know, appearance, everything. And it's me, 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 and I want everything. Teaching humility helps bump girls out of that and really gets them down to some wonderful living.
Style is such a huge, is a huge pressure on kids. And it doesn't, I don't just mean high style. I mean, you know, you can also be concerned about style if you're just grunging around.
Exactly.
It is appearance. Appearance is a big pressure on kids, boys and girls both. And it's just difficult. What do you suggest to let kids know that this is going to change in a year? This is going to change in 2 years.
Exactly. And I think we can't underestimate the significance of the statement you just made. You know, style and clothing and mimicking of advertisements and people on television really changes a character of a kid, if you will. You know, our kids are, our daughters are being sexualized at a very early age because of the use of sex to sell clothing to them. But one of the most important things fathers can do is to teach girls, A, that the process is going on and they don't like it. And your job as a dad is to help her. You're on her side. You're not, you know, it's not her and Britney Spears against dad. It's you and her against some bad influences of other people. So let her know that you're her advocate. Britney Spears is not her advocate. Britney Spears and the others want her money. The other thing it's very important to do is not to focus on her appearance, but to focus on her character qualities and who she is and why you love her as a person, and to say that, you know, rather than saying, oh, you look so nice, or oh, have you lost weight, or oh, you look so fit. Talk about her ability to be patient, to be diligent, to be responsible. And by doing that, it'll make her feel so much better. Eventually, that will carry greater weight than appearance.
Are dads afraid to play the role of hero?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, all girls want their dad to be a hero, and what dads don't realize is a girl assigns that role to her dad well before he has any idea.
Yeah.
Because in a little girl's eyes, her dad is huge, his voice is lower, he is stronger, he is smarter, he is capable of anything. But I think that fathers feel very confused about, you know, how authoritative are they to be in the relationship?
Right.
Are they to relate on an equal level? They're afraid that their kids won't like them, so they don't want to make, you know, authoritative rules. And you cannot be a hero if you try to sidle up next to your daughter and be an understanding, compassionate friend. It just doesn't work. Hero first and friend second.
I was going to say, you can be an understanding, compassionate father, but not an understanding, compassionate friend.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I one of the great regrets in my life is that I do tend to be a boomer, and I'm loud. And the proper exercise of authority sometimes if expressed in anger, is very damaging. And what do you say to angry dads? They want to be good dads.
Of course.
They believe in expressing love, but they're also, they're upset. They're angry.
Exactly.
It's a tough world to live in.
Right. And I will tell you, every single father I wrote about in my book is a very broken dad, but there are a lot of big things that they got right. And then grace covered the rest of it.
Yeah.
And you can be a good enough dad because your daughter wants you to be. For angry fathers who are screamers or, you know, they lose control, it's very important at some point to go back and apologize for the behavior. However, you can't, probably in that anger there was a good point that the father was trying to make.
Yeah.
You can't leave the house dressed like a prostitute. Now, that's strong language, but that's what a lot of girls look like when they go out. And a father would, you know, that pushes a lot of buttons in a dad, and he'll scream. You know, I didn't express it the right way. I lost my temper. I ask your forgiveness for that. However, this is why I felt that way, and you can't dress like that. So you've got to be able to make sure that the daughter doesn't just manipulate you into feeling guilty, so you throw everything out.
Right. I think that's actually one of the most difficult skills in parenting, and that is to ask forgiveness without diminishing authority.
Exactly.
You know, you do. You have to ask forgiveness because you make mistakes.
Yep.
You expect the kids to ask forgiveness. But you're still the father.
Exactly.
You know, so the you may have been trying to do the right thing and you just did it badly.
Right. Exactly. And I think you very well can keep that authority if you believe you still have it and you communicate it.
Yeah.
To your daughter and say, you know what, you can't wear those clothes. I'm going to work really hard on not yelling, but it's so upsetting to me. So in order to help me not get so upset because I love you so much, you know, tomorrow and the next day and the next day, you have to have your body covered from your neck to your knees when you go to school, something like that.
Do girls marry men like their father? And what does that say? Or if they marry men who are not like their father, what does that say?
Well, many girls who are in their teen years or early adult years who've had a bad relationship with their father, perhaps abusive or a disinterested father, one who abandoned them, swear up and down that they will never marry anybody like their dad because of this, this, and this, and this. Now, their intentions may be good. However, we do what we know. We repeat what is familiar because for good or ill, it's what we know, and that's what girls gravitate towards. That happens even more strongly if a daughter has a good relationship with her dad because she knows what to expect, what to look for, and it's very easy then for her to just repeat what she knows. So that's why I wrote, you know, be the man you want your daughter to marry because, and that's a pretty loaded thing to tell a man, and I don't assign that lightly. I realize I'm making an extraordinary statement there, a lot of responsibility, but that's exactly what girls do. They gravitate toward someone who has strong characteristics of their dad.
Well, Meg, I want to thank you much. Great book. I hope that it gets wide distribution. We have it available in our online bookstore, and I know it's available throughout the country. So thanks for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Dr. Meg Meeker, pediatrician. Her specialty is adolescent health. And let me again recommend the book to you. It's called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, 10 Secrets Every Father Should Know. I'm Al Cresta. More coming up on the other side of the break.
As Christians, we must teach our children to love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. There's a school in Ann Arbor that helps parents fulfill that duty, Shepherd Montessori School. Based on the principles of Dr. Maria Montessori, the great Catholic educator whose centenary we celebrate this year, Shepherd Montessori School serves children aged 2.5 to 6. We cultivate each child's intellectual strengths while fortifying the soul through daily devotions and Catholic traditions. We believe that faith and knowledge go hand in hand, and that's how you open a child's heart to the Lord. We're conveniently located in the Domino's Farms office park at the intersection of US 23 and M14, where we also offer before and after school care. Call for fall enrollment information, 734-930-3600. That's 734-930-3600. Shepherd Montessori School, where children learn to love God, heart, soul, mind, and strength.
From real estate to plumbing, from pet care to dentistry, Catholic business professionals are finding increased business when advertising with the Catholic Business Pages. For more information about advertising or to get your free copy, go to CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. Get better results when you advertise. That's CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. CatholicBusinessPages.com is brought to you this week by Becker Legal. What if you actually liked your attorney? Life is frustrating enough. Your attorney shouldn't be.
Lori Becker can assist you with all matters concerning family law, estate planning, and criminal matters. At Becker Legal, we listen, we respond, and we return your phone calls. To talk with an attorney who cares, call Lori Becker today at 1-888-YOU-DECIDE. That's 888-U-D-E-C-I-D-E. CatholicBusinessPages.com, your best choice.
Good to be with you. We've got another half hour to talk about the things that matter most. And focus today has been on fatherhood, with Father's Day coming up. One of the most talked about of U.S. social phenomena in the past 30 years has been the fatherhood crisis. And while Christians have been very interested in being part of the public debate on this, there hasn't been widespread recognition that Christianity might well be a source of renewal for fatherhood in everyday life. Join me right now to discuss this very thing is Dr. Brad Wilcox. He's the author of Soft Patriarchs, New Men, How Christianity Shapes Fathers and Husbands. And Dr. Wilcox is an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Virginia, a member of the James Madison Society at Princeton. And is this your first book?
It is, Alan.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to have you with me. Thanks.
It's great to be here.
Talk to me about this crisis in fatherhood. When was it first written about? When was it first noticed?
Well, this phenomenon began to be noticed in the late 1980s, really, at the more popular level, when a man named David Blankenhorn, who is the president of the Institute for American Values, wrote a book on fatherless America.
Right.
And his book, I think, really articulated why kids need their dads, and what's happened in the last 30 years to really reduce the likelihood that kids will spend their entire childhood with their dad.
So there is a genuine crisis in the concept of fatherhood and in the practice of fatherhood in the United States. That's well established.
That's right. I mean, in the late 1950s, the vast majority of kids would spend their entire childhood in an intact family with both their mother and the father, whereas today only about half of all children will spend their entire life with both their mother and father, both because our divorce rate's probably around 45% right now, and because about one-third of all children are born outside of marriage.
Mm-hmm. Well, what can we say? How will boys who grow up without their father have a more difficult time in life?
Yes, we can. We know that from a variety of different sources. So, for instance, Sarah McLennan, who's a professor of sociology at Princeton and a former teacher of mine, did a study looking at children's and boys, actually, likelihood of ending up in prison. And what she found is that boys who grew up outside of an intact married family are more than twice as likely to end up in prison. This is controlling for things like income and education and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
What's also interesting, though, is that she found that boys who grew up in step families were as likely to end up in prison. So something about having a connection, with your biological father in a married family that seems to help boys.
What's a single mom to do?
That's a great question, Al. And actually, I grew up in a home headed by a single mother.
Mm-hmm.
I think, one thing that, and this is obvious, I think, to most people, is to try to, connect your children to grandfathers if they're good role models, and or other men in your church, if you can identify a good priest who has time to spend some time with your kids, it's also a good thing. So those are all things that single mothers can do if either they've been divorced or if they've been widowed or whatnot. But I think also we have to take a step back and realize that for the most part the best thing that we can do both as Catholics and as citizens, is to strengthen laws protecting marriage, and also to do more in our congregations and in our communities to support people in their marriages, and to also to, I mean, to stigmatize people who are adulterous or who are, you know, giving a bad example in some important respect.
So that's still important. I mean, the opinion of others, the idea of the stigma, the scarlet letter, it's still important to curb behavior?
Very important. Of course, we've largely lost stigma around marriage-related issues, including like childbearing. But if you look at patterns of smoking, for instance, you know, that's one behavior that has become stigmatized in the last two decades in the United States. And we've seen dramatic changes in smoking. And I think people have to realize that, I mean, frankly, you know, marriage is a lot more important than smoking for the welfare of our children and our communities, and we need to rediscover the virtue of stigmatizing behavior that undercuts marriage. I mean, and really one of the best predictors of whether or not a man will be an active and engaged and affectionate father is if he is in a high-quality marriage with the mother of his children. So when we're thinking about fathers, we have to really also think about marriage at the same time.
Is there a difference, a measurable difference, between Christian families and secular families?
There is. In my book, I look at primarily at evangelical and mainline Protestant fathers, but I also have actually data in the appendix that covers Catholic fathers. And what I find in general is that Christian fathers, compared to men who are not religiously affiliated, that is secular men, are more they're more involved, they're more affectionate, and they're stricter with their children compared to secular dads. So, for instance, just to give you some numbers on involvement, church-going evangelical dads spend about 3.5 more hours and youth activities, things like, you know, Boy Scouts, youth soccer, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Active Catholics spend about 1.7 more hours in such activities. And active mainline Protestant fathers spend about 2 more hours in such activities. Mm-hmm. That is compared to secular fathers. When it comes to affection, they're all about 60% more likely to hug and praise their children.
Really?
Very often, compared to secular dads. And in this outcome, the church-going Catholic dads come out on top. So the bottom line here is that, in some ways it's ironic, but if you're looking for the quote-unquote new father in our culture, it seems to me the best place to look is in your local church.
My guest is Dr. Brad Wilcox. He is the author of Soft Patriarchs, New Men, How Christianity Shapes Fathers and Husbands. And with Father's Day before us, I thought it would be a good day to focus in on this idea of the father. The concept of patriarchy is has become almost revered among social critics and sociologists. What is commonly in feminist critics, what is commonly meant by patriarchy?
By patriarchy, they mean male authority, primarily in the home and in the broader society. The idea that men have a unique role in leadership,
mm-hmm.
in the family or in the church or in the society at large. And then it also can be associated with the idea, and this is where I think it gets a lot more fuzzy, with gender specialization or gifts, be they in the home or the church or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the,
mm-hmm.
So the Catholic position, for instance, that only men should be ordained to the priesthood is seen as patriarchal, for asserting that there's some kind of unique character to the male sex associated
mm-hmm.
with the priesthood. Or the idea that mothers, excel as nurturers compared to fathers can be seen in some quarters as kind of a patriarchal idea. But basically it's this idea that that men should be the primary authority figures.
What's wrong with patriarchy?
Well, I think, as with any system, there are obviously abuses
sure.
Can be associated with with patriarchy, and I think there are plenty of men out there, you know, both in the church and in, the, and in families,
mm-hmm.
who believe that patriarchy gives them a license to dominate and to even to abuse the, you know, members of their congregations or their families.
Does the concept of male headship, for instance, that Southern Baptist talked about back in 1998, does that idea lead to increased abuse, a tendency to abuse or to violate one's spouse or one's children?
Well, it's an interesting point that you raise, because Stephen Cokie Roberts, who are, you know, prominent journalists in Washington, actually Cokie's Catholic and Steve's Jewish, they have a regular column in the wake of the Southern Baptist statement in 1998 regarding male headship. They wrote that this type of thinking, quote, can clearly lead to abuse, both physical and emotional, unquote. So with actually that charge in mind, I took a look at reports of domestic violence in American couples in the early 1990s, and what I found was that the lowest rates actually of domestic violence were in those households where the couples were active evangelical Protestants. And these, of course, are the ones that be most likely to support male headship.
Right, right.
But the interesting thing is the highest rates of domestic violence were in households headed by men who were nominal evangelical Protestants. So in other words, if you take a guy in Arkansas and he is a regular attender of his local evangelical church, he's probably going to have a pretty darn good marriage. But if you take, you know, a neighbor of his, three or four houses down the street, who is also a Southern Baptist, but, you know, never darkens the door of a church, he's much more likely to abuse his wife and to have a lot of other negative outcomes like divorce, et cetera, associated with his family life. So my point here is that what I think may be happening is that when male headship is connected to a strong Christian vision of service and also to, you know, a regular encounter with God in worship and with brothers and sisters in Christ who keep you accountable, I think that's actually, you know, can be quite constructive. On the other hand, when male headship is detached from its kind of religious roots, if you will, both theologically and practically, socially, then I think it might become a license for bad behavior.
See, I wonder even how meaningful the concept is. When I look at Ephesians chapter 5, where St. Paul talks about the husband loving his wife as Christ loved the church, the woman respecting her husband, it seems to me as though and both are to be submissive. All Christians are to be in some way submissive to one another. I wonder what does male headship mean if the person is laying down his life for another?
That's a great question. I mean, I think about headship in the sense of authorship, you know, that men, Christian men, have a responsibility to in a sense, try to set the mission for their families. Mm-hmm. And that mission is primarily, of course, religious and supernatural, but there's also obviously a strong component of kind of morality, in the sense of, you know, trying to set a certain moral tone for their family, particularly for their kids. And then there are obviously maybe other things, too, that as a family they, you know, they're particularly, you know, keen on, whether it's, you know, baseball or painting or whatever. And so I think in that sense there's something about, you know, Christ is kind of authoring, if you will, the church. And there's something about that kind of analogical way of thinking or metaphorical way of thinking that can help us understand male headship.
Very good.
But I also think, as you rightly point out, that for men to be effective in that type of leadership, it requires that they do so in a sacrificial spirit.
Now, what does that mean then for women? Because the complaint is usually from the feminist side of the argument, which is that these concepts lead to abuse. Now, you're saying, well, it's much more complicated than this. There is a vision of male headship, which is rooted in Christ's relationship to the church. So if this idea of authorship is connected with headship and laying down one's life for the family, then right. What is the response of the wife?
Well, I think the response of the wife, obviously, is number one, I mean, to provide as much input mm-hmm. and her own observations, and encouragements, towards mm-hmm. Her husband in terms of giving him a sense of what she thinks about how the family is doing in many of these domains, her suggestions about what he can do better and what the kids can do better, et cetera. So there's a certain kind of advice, I think, and wisdom that wives often have more so than men in terms mm-hmm. of actually what's happening internally in the family.
Yes.
And they need to communicate that wisdom to their husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think also wives need to encourage their husbands to take leadership in the home. And I think what often happens is that men get too busy with jobs or leisure activities or whatever else, friends, that and lose sight of their family responsibilities.
Yeah.
And obviously in a gentle way, wives can try to encourage their husbands to recognize that their first vocational priority is to make sure that their family is actually living in accordance with with a certain sense of mission.
We've got about 45 seconds before the break. I want to talk about contraception. Does contraception have sociological consequences?
Yes. There's a Nobel Prize winning economist named George Akerlof who basically argued that contraception paved the way for the sexual revolution and for the rise in illegitimacy
mm-hmm.
By making it easier for folks to have sex outside of marriage and for making that more common. So it played a key role there and then also encouraged divorce by making marriages less child-centered.
Okay. Is it fair to say that the social science data has largely vindicated the Christian moral teaching on sex and marriage?
Yes, Al, it is. I mean, what's interesting is that there's just a lot of evidence now coming out on the benefits of marriage for children and for adults in communities. And there's also increasing evidence, too, on the issue of contraception, which is, of course, the most controversial issue, I think, in the church. So the bottom line is that, yes, we're seeing more evidence in line coming out that supports Catholic teaching on a range of matters related to sex, marriage, divorce, etc.
Brad, thanks so much for being with us. We'll make sure that the book is linked to our website as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Al.
Dr. Brad Wilcox, again, assistant professor of sociology at the University of Virginia, author of Soft Patriarchs, New Men.
When it comes to estate planning and wills, you probably have more questions than answers. But don't worry, Hamilton & Associates has answers to all your questions. And just to get things started, they have a very simple question for you. Do you really want someone totally unrelated to you to have total control in making the final disposition of your hard-earned assets? And while you're thinking about it, think about this. Are your assets properly titled? They will be with help from Greg Hamilton at Hamilton & Associates. Greg is a family man who's active in the community and proud to run a Christian-based business. He speaks and teaches nationally on estate and business planning and knows the importance of establishing long-term relationships with his clients. When you have questions, they have answers at Hamilton & Associates. Be sure to listen Monday for answers to the questions discussed today. For more information, call 248-642-6150. That's 248-642-6150.
Here's Colin Donovan with an update on EWTN's family celebration for Ave Maria Radio listeners.
This free two-day event will be held at the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center in Birmingham, Alabama, on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd. You'll be able to spend time in adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, go to confession, and attend Holy Mass with your EWTN family from around the world. You'll hear powerful talks by Father Benedict Groeschel, Mother Assumpta Long, Marcus Grodi and Father Antoine Thomas and others, and plan on bringing the kids. A special area will be set up just for children. For more information, go to www.ewtn.com or call 1-205-795-5820 during regular business hours. We hope to see you at this year's EWTN Family Celebration, Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd.
Thank you for a great afternoon, and reminding you that Catholic Answers Live with Jerry Usher coming up in the next hour, as long as you stay listening to EWTN Global Catholic Radio. Tonight at 8 o'clock, The World Over Live with Raymond Arroyo, Dr. Meg Meeker, pediatrician, who joined us earlier in this hour, talking about strong fathers, strong daughters, and the crucial bond between them. Now, you can follow up on any of the program segments on today's Crest in the Afternoon by going to AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. You can buy the books that are mentioned in the program by going to the online bookstore. You can follow up on any of the guests, their websites, articles they've written, background materials for the interviews by just clicking the Cresta Guest Archives, and by all means, take today's poll. So, again, AveMariaRadio.net, where you can pick up Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, Crucial Bond Between Them, and also Soft Patriarchs, New Men, How Christianity Shapes Fathers and Husbands. God be with you. Keep us in your prayers, and I'll be with you next week for another hour talking about the things that matter most here on Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is produced and distributed by Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The executive producer is Nick Tong. The technical engineer, Kara Coulter. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. To order your copy of this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. Christ is the answer.
Christ is the Answer is produced by the Ave Maria Communications Guild and is heard Wednesday evenings at 7:30, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO at 1440 WMAX.
AAA's Show Your Card and Save discounts can save you up to 20% on dining, lodging, automotive repairs, clothing, and more at thousands of places nationwide. Call 1-800-AAA-HELP and get your savings in motion.
Most investment advisors in large brokerage houses have their hands tied when it comes to their investment options. They cannot morally direct your portfolio due to their corporate policy.
Jim and Stacy from Faith Financial Planners talk about how to invest in a way that reflects your faith commitment.
But the reason Jim and I come to work every day at Faith Financial Planners is to make sure that fellow Christians can invest their money in a morally directed way without sacrificing financial performance.
The fact that we are independent financial advisors allows us to utilize morally directed investment choices to make sure your finances reflect your walk with Christ.
Get morally directed investment advice from Jim and Stacy at Faith Financial Planners today. Call 1-800-529-9434 or go to WDEO.net and click on advertising links. That's 1-800-529-9434. Securities offered through Capital Financial Services, Inc.